Testing. 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 Make sure that everything is working all right, which should be, yes. For the record, let's just indicate that today is Friday, November 9th, 1990. And this is Jim Boning talking to Professor William Dering at the Beckman Center in Philadelphia. I know that you were born on June 22nd, 1917 in Fort Worth. Could you tell me something about your parents and your family background?
Yeah, my mother was born in St. Thomas, which at that time was owned by Denmark. So she is in fact Danish and comes from a very old family that was knighted in 1204, and that's where the Van Eggers comes in. And I guess her grandfather was governor of the those three islands when they were owned by Denmark. There was, and but she was a concert pianist. Grew up in Copenhagen, and then concertized all over Europe. And by 1911, was teaching piano at the Conservatory of Music in Leipzig. Now, my father was born in Philadelphia she was born in 84 and he was born in 89, so that she was 5 years older than he. And his mother died when he was quite young, and he had an uncle, Uncle George, who was very interested in music and who pushed him quite hard to become a pianist and a composer. And so he was shipped over to Leipzig to study music and composition around 1911. And that's where they met. And then were married in 1913 in Copenhagen. And then stayed in Leipzig after the war broke out. But I guess I'm right about that. I could be confused about that. In any event, there's some time when there's a marvelous letter from his father to them saying, look, the United States is going to get into this war and you'd better come home. So indeed they did. And I think they arrived in New York in 1915 looking for employment, both as musicians. And it turned out that at Texas Christian University in Fort Worth, there were openings for both of them, my mother teaching piano and my father teaching composition. So that lasted for a bit, and I think my father quite wisely decided he was not going to be a Brahms or a Schumann. And probably also because the of the war, decided to enter medical school. And so he went to medical school at Baylor. And one of the more amusing incidents, to me at least, was that he never went to college. He graduated from Central High School in Philadelphia, a high school with an enormous reputation for the quality of its graduates, and they admitted him directly to medical school from this Baylor High School with many years of nothing but music intervening. So apparently he commuted back and forth between Fort Worth and Dallas, where the Baylor Medical School was. So that that's how I came to be born in Fort Worth. We only stayed there then for a little less than 5 years. And so by the time I was five, we moved to Baltimore, because by that time he had decided that practicing medicine was not what he was interested in, but that he was interested in the application of mathematics to medical problems. So he came here to the to Baltimore, to the School of Public Health, where he got whatever the degree is you get in public health, as a vital statistician.
Okay.
So had, and that really turned out to be his real love, which was mathematics, or let's say statistics. And so we were there for 3 years, and then came to Cambridge because he was appointed to the Harvard School of Public Health as a vital statistician.
Was your mother still teaching in these,
and
when you moved?
And she taught piano all her life, as a matter of fact. And and so it was, and my father obviously loved music, and so there was music in the house all the time. They, in fact, found those years in Fort Worth, which after all is quite a long time ago, the most delightful in their lives in the United States. And I have no understanding for it, but I still marvel at my little Danish mother, who was, you know, used to be being entertained by nobility and the Esterházys and things like this as she toured around Europe. She gave her first concert when she was in Tivoli in Copenhagen when she was 11. So, but they obviously just loved the openness and the naturalness and the sort of sincere enthusiasm of the musical culture in Fort Worth of those days, which apparently was really quite active. And I suppose there was a significant German population in that part of the world. And it was very, very moving to me many years later to get an honorary degree from the TCU, to meet some of these old, inevitably, ladies, right? The men having all died off long before. But you know, with their marbles still in place. And remembering all sorts of details and being so, so glad to see what had happened to this little Billy that they had remembered as a baby in Fort Worth.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, and I had a brother 9 years younger, so in effect, you know, coming to that point, grew up as an older child during those years when your sense of self-importance is aggravated by being an only child or the firstborn child. I mean, one never can look into oneself and see to what extent that makes a difference, but In retrospect, it's perfectly clear that it does, because and so, yes, yeah, so he's now Harvey Fenegas, during 9 years younger. He went into metallurgical engineering and died actually a couple of years ago, so, of a stroke. And so there were the two of us.
You started your schooling in Baltimore then?
Not
had you
really,
something
no.
In Texas?
No schooling in that I can remember in Baltimore. Now, how that worked, I simply don't know.
Because you were, what, six to eight, something like that.
Yeah, I was... So the first schooling I can remember was in Cambridge of, going 1 year to the Agassiz School and another year to the Peabody School and another year at the Russell School and skipping the fourth grade and being put in what at the time was a very famous progressive school, the Shady Hill School. It had been started by Hocking, I don't remember his first name and never knew him, as an educational experiment where we were not going to go through all the rote learning and so forth and so on. And meanwhile, in those first 3 years of school, I was an incredibly sickly child. Those were the days when if you got measles, you were likely to get pneumonia with it and be dead as a smelt within a few weeks with no penicillins and nothing like that. And so a bout with measles pneumonia kept me out of school for months. And altogether, as far as from what they said, I mean, I really, out of those 3 years, didn't have very many more than a few months of schooling. And so I went into the Shady Hill School in the fifth grade. And and in that school, three persons really worked quite an influence on me. This is rambling around.
No, this is fine. Just what I would like to hear.
Mr. McCarthy, who taught Latin, and he just loved Latin. He loved the order of it, and the fact that Latin was so well designed that you could say whatever you were thinking in a way that could not be misunderstood by anyone who knew Latin. And to this day, it works an influence on me. I write with no style whatsoever, but I pay a tremendous attention to writing in such a way that what I'm trying to say can't be misunderstood. And then I think Mr. McCarthy would be satisfied, even though he would say, "You're no Horace or Virgil or Cicero, but in any event, you can get down on paper what you're thinking, if you know what you're thinking." And that was one of the beauties of Latin to me, that it required one to... really to examine one's thoughts and try to discover what is it you're trying to say, rather than the usual way, "I don't know what I'm thinking till I've heard what I've said." And then there was Miss Edgett, who taught math. A messy desk comes from a messy mind. And she was very vigorous. There were two of these old, a type of of lady that one could still encounter when some decades ago at places like Smith or Mount Holyoke or in various parts of New England, and I guess also in Fort Worth, Texas, of women for whom women's liberation just didn't mean anything. They were liberated. They knew what they wanted to do, and they did it with a great deal of self-confidence, and it wasn't a question of competing with men. I mean, it was... they knew who they were in the world, and there was a great deal of that in New England. Old New England is essentially a matriarchal culture, with the women being the tough ones. And one family after the other. I mean, some of the men might have been crooked and therefore made a lot of money, but but the power really lay in these women. Well, Miss Edgett and Miss Putnam were two spinsters who lived in Beverly, Massachusetts, and commuted every day to Cambridge, the two of them. Miss Edgett, a big, strong, solid woman who loved her math and teaching it, and Miss Putnam, who was taught science. And of course, the whole attitude of the school was, the principle on which it was based, was to teach you how to think and how to ask questions, and not the emphasis was not on what you learned, and to a great extent to make it an experience. And so, for example, when one was studying isn't the word to use, Greek culture, then you had to have Olympic Games and get dressed up in togas or whatever they were, or run around the field and have a wreath put on your head at the end of it. So it was, it wasn't unstructured, but it in a real sense, but by comparison with conventional schooling, it certainly was unstructured. But it was it was perhaps the only important part of my education those years at Shady Hill School. I stayed on through the ninth grade. And by which time, there was no question in my mind I was going to become a scientist. Now, partly that's because my father was a vital statistician, and but certainly partly because of Miss Putnam, the third one in the group that worked an influence on me. Very quiet, reserved, unsmiling, person, you know, from whom from a distance I just sort of worship God. And so I knew I was going to be a scientist. I went from there to the Belmont Hill School, which was a private school, still is. And I mean, just to show how great my formal education was in the first nine grades of my life, at the end of my first semester, I had two D's and two E's. And I ended up getting an award. That was the first award in my life. It was for showing the greatest improvement. The only reason I got it was that I started so low. But part of the background, which is interesting, I think, and accounts for a great deal of sort of a subsequent attitude I developed, was of being an outsider, and of wanting to be an outsider. It really, in the end, had a big influence on my scientific work, that one of avoiding any subject which was crowded or in which other persons were working. And it it had various consequences. One being that as soon as I had in effect opened very shortly after opening a field, if other persons flocked into it, I would try as hard as I could to do what seemed to me make the important discoveries, or let's say follow the important consequences of the initiating concept. Divalent carbon would be an example. And then as soon as everyone and his brother were jumping into the field, as far as I was concerned, there are some other parts of the West to explore. You don't stay around any longer, you move on. And that's part of being an outsider. But in any event, that a lot of that really came from my early, not so early childhood, but those years, perhaps from 10 on. But by the time I was 10, my father was in really very serious psychological difficulties, and so he was a person that throughout his life drank. In those days, what was fashionable was to take barbiturates and what was the other thing, alcohol, and was it belladonna that had some?
Could be, yes.
Anyway, there was a trio, and so every so often he would come staggering home, and my mother would put him upstairs and bring up his meal, and so it was a very strenuous childhood in that sense, and she was a remarkable woman in that certainly misguidedly she believed that it was the outside world that was making her beloved husband depressed, and which he was, and in a sense totally unsophisticated in a modern sense of looking at somebody who's in trouble and trying to say, well, what's the basis for all that, and so on. And so she was enormously protective of me, in the sense that she never had a bad word to say about him, and only praise for the qualities, the many very fine, wonderful qualities. He was an extraordinarily kind gentleman, obviously very sensitive. His own mother had died when he was 10 or 11, which is a bad time in the life of any young person to lose a parent. You go through all kinds of crazy things that have been analyzed in many, many ways. And so he grew up in a household with no woman, in which he would come home from Central High School and have dinner ready for his older brother and his father and so forth and so on. And and I just cherished the sort of the little windows in his life when he was just fine and would talk to me about this, that, and the other thing. So I was really very, very lucky, it seems to me, in having a very strong affection for both parents, and not being obliged, as so many youngsters that I see, to make a choice between one or the other. But even more critical, as a male child, not having had my father destroyed by my mother. I mean, any modern wife would have really, because hers was not an easy life. I mean, he obviously was not progressing in his profession as well as he might, and so part of the reason she taught piano all her life was to raise, to make a little more money. But he worked so hard on, you know, that was where his pleasures came from, and his escape, I guess, to some extent. And I'm sure that just seeing that inculcated in me the notion that, well, your work is your most important thing, and you, no matter how rotten the world is around you, personally and otherwise, you can survive that way. In the end, he made a very, very interesting discovery. He was the person in 1928 who discovered statistically the relation between smoking and lung cancer. Mm. And so he was this really, what you would say, desperately ill man. But nevertheless, a wonderful, lovable person. And so I had a chance at least to learn positive lessons and negative lessons, but never to have had him, never was he destroyed as an image. I'm going to have to go to the John again.